winners. I want people that want to win.
Welcome to We Want Winners. Rod and I are here, I don't know, what, about 20 minutes after the 49ers got trampled? Score-wise, it wasn't too bad. But they got their tails kicked today against the Seahawks. And we were joking in about the second quarter how if things were going to continue, that we may be able to just start this podcast super early and even get it done before the game was finished. But I think you have to, it's hard to give credit to a team that just got outclassed and outplayed, and they're just out-talented at the same time by this Seattle team. There was a moment there when they're down 10, you know, when they're down going into their best chance to score, and Brock's pass gets tipped. McCaffrey's kind of turning to the side, ball's thrown behind him. Instead of catching it or swatting it down, he pops it in the air and Seattle gets an interception. And that kind of signifies that, okay, this thing's just not going our way. And there was a moment where I was like, you know, even though this game is really bad, the defense is almost playing harder than they even should have any right feeling like they could play, because they're just from a skill and talent level, they didn't really the score should have been somewhere in the 20s or 30s for Seattle, and they kept it at 13. So I thought there was some positives there, but when you look up and down the talent, you compare those two defenses just player for player, there's a wide gap between these two football teams. And what we've been saying this entire last stretch of the season is that if they're going to win these games, they need to outscore these teams. And I will say the defense gave them a chance to win the game, but the offense is where they couldn't do anything. No Trent Williams and Austin Pleasant. He turned back into Austin Pleasants in this game, and that was kind of it. But what was your major takeaway in what was a pretty disappointing game?
Well, especially after, you know, the first two field goal misses, I'm like, you know, wait a minute. It felt like they were getting dominated.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, wait a minute. Is Seattle going to mess around and let these dudes hang in here? And are they going to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory? Kind of like they did in week one. But like you just said, it was just too tall a task for this team. And I am not striving to be the contrarian that I tend to be when it comes, you know, because especially online 49er fans, when they zig, I tend to zag. I am not, you know, isolating that this was an embarrassment or a disappointment. I guess I get disappointing, but I don't think that these dudes have anything to be embarrassed about. If you hadn't watched Seattle since week one and thought that that's who was showing up, then it just shows you haven't watched. This is a good football team. They are still kind of figuring out it on offense, but that defense is legit. And the fact that you couple the fact that there was no Trent Williams with the fact that your offensive line is what it is, kind of just as is. But then when you take Trent out of there, it changes the math. And then when you're talking about the fact when Troy and Joe are talking about missing Pretty Ricky as that's a problem.
Yeah.
And you couple that with the fact that what did Christian have, like 66 yards or something like that crazy. It wasn't going to be. And you kind of had to figure that is the game plan for everybody, is that, look, if, you know, we're going to stop Christian, and if somebody else can beat us, then so be it. And I'm sure that that's everybody's game plan going into a Niner game. But Seattle was by far the most successful of anybody so far this season at neutralizing him completely. And when that mix, that cocktail of things happens, they're gonna be hard pressed to win a game, even when the defense held them to 13 points, which was, but it's kind of like it was kind of like watching somebody fight a liver puncher, in that, you know, okay, it was only 13 points, but when they get, you know, 180 yards rushing on 40 attempts, they took a beating it was pretty decisive. It was not nearly as close as a 10-point game, I didn't feel. They were pretty well as dominated as somebody can be in a 13-3 game. That was us tonight.
So it sounds like Trent Williams and Ricky were really, really trying to play tonight. And I saw a quote from Shanahan just a little while ago saying it would have been really risky to play them tonight. And, you know, he had a quote that I thought it was like, maybe not the kind of quote you want to hear out of your head coach. Just sort of like Steve Kerr the other night was on Tom Tolbert's show, and he was like, yeah, we can't really compete with Oklahoma City and the Spurs. And fans were like, why would you even say that? Like, why are we even watching anymore? But I mean, he's just being honest about what the situation is like. And Shanahan tonight said something to the effect of, winning this game is almost more important than next week. And like, if you think about it, you're like, well, next week, if you don't win, your season's over. Mm-hmm. And so he was just stressing the importance of beating Seattle so that they could have that bye, have the home field advantage, and only have to play two games to get into the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments where I was like, he feels like us, the fans. Like, because that's absolutely what we were feeling. Like, we were feeling like if we have to go into Philadelphia or Chicago, which is what is likely. I was asking Sheldon what the scenarios were for next week. Now, I think going into Philly is like probably the worst possible case scenario, and that might be the more likely one. Going into Chicago would definitely be tough too, but they proved that they could move the ball on Chicago, as Chicago proved they can move the ball on us. So that would be a game a little bit more at the 49ers tempo. Philadelphia game would be a lot harder. I think what we're hoping is that somehow, some way, the ghost of Neil Lomax is going to pull the Cardinals into victory over the Rams or something. Because then we would face the Tampa Bay or Carolina division winner. All that
everybody's
said,
trying to end up.
Yeah,
everybody's
exactly.
trying to end up in the NFC South Stadium.
Exactly. So, you know, it just was not meant to be tonight. And, you know, then Tatum Bethune got hurt, Dee Winters got hurt, and it sounds like that those injuries could linger into next week, which is not great. I haven't seen anything about Brock, because Brock ended the game pretty much on his back and trying to get up, and he had hit his thumb on a helmet right before that. So, you know, I would imagine I would have seen something if he was really hurting. But if, you know, we are at the end of this scenario. Like, I don't know if you, like, did you know that linebacker that they had to put in the game, Wallow? I didn't even know who that guy was.
I did not. And again, I don't want to sound like a bigot or anything, but I was thinking, well, did, like, and I know that doesn't happen. It's like, did Luke Gifford change his number or something? I mean, I was like, who was Wallow? And I mean, I kind of pride myself on watching this stuff, and I had never heard of that guy. So I don't, you know.
There was a special teams play. I think it was a punt, where he pulled the face mask of somebody, and it's like, it had nothing to do with the play at all. And so they lost 15 yards, like, very early in the game. And I was like, first off, who is that dude? And second off, like, how stupid was that? Like, it, like, you know, he wasn't going to block the punt or whatever it was. And so then when he had to actually come into the game, and you'll know the play where he got kind of deked out of his shoes, which is Sam Darnold on third down rolled out to his right in the fourth quarter. And he was in the area of where Cooper Kupp kind of went to his spot. And then as Darnold was rolling out, Cooper Kupp did a little bit of a juke, and Wallow like lost him. He was like, wait, where'd this dude go? And then first down, like that would be the play that people would know. And it's, he didn't lose them the game, but just the fact that he had to play tells you that this is going to be rough sledding for them. Even if you get Trent back next week, even if you get Pretty Ricky, D. Winters' whole ankle got stepped on by a 300-pound offensive lineman. Tatum Bethune went down two separate times in the game. That man was doing everything he possibly could to stay on that field, and maybe to his detriment. So, you know, Eric Kendricks, who they signed off the street not too long ago, was in the game and was on
and
the
Wallow,
field.
I did not have the Kendrick Wallow Quintella on my bingo card. No. That was one that I did not. You know, yeah, it's gonna be Kendrick and Wallow holding down the linebacker core in the biggest game of the season.
That's a better law office than it is a linebacking core on a football team. So now, you know, we are not here, and I saw this a lot on Twitter when you are watching the game and you really, really desperately want your team to win, and you know what's on the opposite end of not winning, which is what we were all fearful of. You know, you're trying to be, you're, as a fan, you're trying to root them on and do everything you can. And I saw a lot of fans who were just so disappointed at the no-show. And you know, from the perspective of, you know, we talked about it last week. Brock Purdy was playing the best we'd ever seen him play. And so you expect that to carry over even against a good, I would call it maybe the best defense they played all year long was the Seattle defense tonight. And so you're just thinking like, man, you know, Brock's the magician. He's going to make it happen. And he didn't have the time in the pocket. And then even when he did have a little bit of time, he did not believe he had the time in the pocket, because you saw him looking for escape routes when if he just waited or if he just stepped up, there would have been some spots. And so, you know, yeah, like that was really disappointing, because I think we all had kind of thought, well, if, you know, the offense is going to have to win us some games. And, you know, you went back to you talked about it at the beginning. Seattle's defensive strategy seemed to be, they're not going to beat us with any burners, so we can creep everybody up, and we're just going to stop Christian, and then we're going to, that will allow us to stop their game. And I'm actually interested. I would love, you know, one of these things where I would love to talk to Shanahan about it, because he knows, he's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. But I was like talking to my family, you know, we had the family text going on, and there was a 3rd-and-2 play. And, you know, the offense is struggling. And the 3rd-and-2 play was a 3-yard out to DeMarcus Robinson. And I was thinking like, man, you have, you know, Shanahan has all of these creative thoughts and ideas and just brilliant play calling. And even he was like, our best case scenario here is a 3-yard out to DeMarcus Robinson. Like, I wonder what he saw from Seattle's defense that kind of caused him to call. I mean, that's like a one shot play. I mean, of course you're hoping that Robinson can scoot a little bit, and Brock didn't make a good throw. And it seems like it's a play that they're like, oh yeah, this is open. You know, we can hit this. And it wasn't. But it just seemed like a lot of the Shanahan stuff that you would think was there wasn't really there until that one drive in the fourth quarter, where it seemed like they were kind of, okay, they were playing a little bit more free offensively. And some of that is Seattle is, you know, they're not being as aggressive as they were. But I would love to know, like, what he was, you know, why they played, I guess I would say, a little bit more conservative than usual, or, you know, that because of the inability to extend the field, they were just playing on such a smaller field than usual with that pass rush there. You know, maybe he just thought like, yeah, the normal stuff that we use is not going to be there. We got to call some different stuff. But what did you see when you were watching it?
It is so rough when the thing that my brother pointed out and that I noticed is how constricted the field was when you've got Juwan Jennings, DeMarcus Robinson, and Kendrick Bourne as your receivers. There's just you're not threatening their defense at all. You double George, and then that's, you know, it's pretty much it. You don't really, so everybody is within, you know, 15 yards of the line of scrimmage. It just makes it, the sledding was just so tough, and you can kind of just zone up. And if you're getting pass rush, which I just, was just looking at it, I'm sure the PFF total pressures adds hurries, which ESPN doesn't. But so Brock dropped back 27 times, sacked 3 times, and 8 quarterback hits. So that's 11 times on 27 dropbacks. And I'm sure PFF will give them credit for at least a couple of hurries. So you're talking about, you know, on half of his dropbacks, he's being either hit, hurried, or pressured. So, I mean, and Troy kind of mentioned it, is that, you know, what ends up happening, and you could feel it, how the pressure was kind of speeding him up. I mean, so it's, you know, his internal clock is telling him, I can't be standing back here,
yeah,
patting the ball. I've got to do something with this. And then, as Troy mentioned as well, I mean, he did. That's just a gold standard crew. Is that how there were times when there was places for Brock to kind of just move up, but like, shit, you know, as Troy said, I mean, I can, as I say, sitting up here in the booth, because yeah, I'm sure it doesn't feel like like he can just move up and maneuver in the pocket to him the way the pressure has been all game. And we were just fortunate that it wasn't really until that last one where he really took any really, really, I mean, as I say, sitting on my couch, oh, big hits. Well, I mean, I'm sure all of those 8 hits and 3 sacks he felt, but that last one was really like kind of a kill shot where he takes the 2 hits. Yeah, so that it was just, I mean, again, and I, you know, don't feel the need to come on here and shit on the offense about, I mean, because that defense, if anything, I want to first give credit to them, because they were just really, really, really good. And I knew that they were really, really good coming into that. I kind of like watching defense. And unfortunately for me, two of my, other than the Niners, two of the teams I watch a lot are Niner adjacent, which are the Chargers and the Texans. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of the better defenses, and Seattle is also one of the better defenses in the league. It was going to be tough sledding for us under the best of circumstances, and these weren't. I mean, as Troy, again, I keep saying that, I just thought they did a great job. Ricky gives you kind of an option that no other receiver, as this receiver room is currently constructed, gives you. And then without Trent, and I just think that we saw this show before. The stakes weren't quite as high, but we saw Trent out there playing on one leg against the Rams. I guess that's like 4 years ago now at this point, where, you know, we'd beat them 10 games in a row, and until it's that one time where it really matters, and Trent's out there on one leg. And, you know, it's like the thing that we talk about as a fan base is, at what point does going out there and not healthy become a detriment to your team? Are you hurting your team more than you're helping them being out there? And I think it was the smart play. If you thought that, especially with that hamstring, if you thought that they could harm themselves more than they could help us, because now we gotta, you know, it would have been nice. It would have been really nice to push all the chips into the table, in the middle of the table, and win tonight. But now that we didn't, it's going to be a quick, you know, we're going to have to turn. We'll be, I don't know when we'll play next week, but we're going to be on the road. And it's, and neither one of those situations is going to be ideal.
Robert said that he thought the loss was a little humbling because it showed the reality. And this is kind of what I was thinking as the game started. I was like, you know, this is going to be a truth serum game. Like, how good is this team really? I don't know if you did you see the strength of schedule numbers, how they turned out at the end?
No.
So the Niners, you know, we knew that they were going to have an easier schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But playing Seattle and the Rams twice actually moved them a little bit to the middle as far as the harder schedules. Like, I think their overall winning percentage of the teams that they played was like right under 50%. And then you look at the Pats, and the Pats were like by far the easiest schedule of the entire NFL. By a giant amount, the Pats had the easiest. And so I was looking at it and I was like, okay, well, you know, what we were thinking was that the Niners had a very easy schedule, but because of playing in the NFC West, it did move them a little bit more towards the middle. And the one thing that jumped out to me is that the Rams, you know, we sort of think about, you know, they should have been a little bit better than they were, but they actually had a pretty hard schedule when it came out to it. It's the Eagles who kind of had it a little bit easier and may have been slightly disappointing from a regular season record standpoint. But anyway, the point was, is that some of these wins that they got near the end of the season, beating Phillip Rivers was kind of a big deal when it happened. But when you kind of looked at how Indianapolis was just falling and falling and falling, you know, in hindsight, not as impressive. Beating the Bears was a really big deal. You beat them at home, though, and you know, you're expecting to kind of take care of that in a big game. And so this one to me was like, yeah, this is really the truth serum. How good is this team? Because Seattle, and I don't dislike Sam Darnold. He was on our team. We rooted for him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. We were like, this dude can play quarterback in the NFL. But you put like a Matt Stafford with this Seattle team, and I don't think anybody touches them for the whole playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's how good that they were tonight. But because they have Sam Darnold, I think there's going to be some room for error there that may cause them to trip up. The one thing is that in the NFC, there's not really a killer. Like, there's some really quality football teams, but there's not really a killer. And then in the AFC, I think the Pats are probably going to get beat once they play a good team. Who that good team is going to be, we'll see. Because again, like, just like I don't see a killer on the other side either. So this playoffs is going to be.
Houston's my dark horse.
Who is it?
Houston is my dark horse, and they have a hellacious defense, and they have found something in the run game, and Stroud is playing well. I think it's going to be Denver and Houston. Those would be the two teams
that I would not want to play in the AFC because they play a specific style.
Yeah, I don't believe, you know, I am not, I don't have anything against them at all. I just don't believe in you just confirmed my suspicions about the Patriots, because I'm not going to pretend that I've watched a whole lot of Patriots football, but they kind of seem like a paper tiger to me.
Drake May's probably going to win the MVP, right?
And it's great that, you know, they are much better than they were. And, like, he probably is. And tonight, I was thinking, you know, if Kyle won tonight, he would have, that would be his case for coach of the year. But I would have guessed if they go ahead and beat the Dolphins and they secure the number one seed, I would imagine that Vrabel's going to be coach of the year. Mm-hmm. And like you say, May will probably end up being MVP at this point, which is, I mean, good for them. I don't have any malice against either one of them, except that I happen to root for Jim Harbaugh and
DeMeco
Ryans. So those are the two teams that, if you know, who I would want if I could pick somebody to come, you know, to be in the Super Bowl this year from the AFC, it would be one of those two teams. Because those are just coaches that I happen to have a lot of respect for. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's going to be kind of wide open here. The thing that concerns me, I know we still probably have a little bit more on this game, but thinking about next week, the one thing I knew for sure is I was surprised that the Colts didn't, and I was surprised that the Bears didn't run the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew about Seattle, the fact that, you know, that is a weakness of ours. But even early in the season, when they were averaging like 2 yards a carry, Kubiak has been committed to running the ball, you know, to Seattle fans, to their chagrin, a lot of the times, to running the ball 25, 28, 30 times a game, even when it wasn't yielding anything significant. So I knew that, unlike, it was funny, Kyle mentioned it this week in his press availability, that looking at the tape, it just seems that some teams, quite frankly, look at our secondary and they're like, oh, food. We're gonna go ahead and test these corners and safeties, and they just kind of have gone away from running the ball. And I've been saying it for the whole second half of the season. That's, if you want to make hay against this team, I don't know why you would stop running the ball.
Yep.
I would make us stop it consistently before I would just continue. And we made some good plays today, but it is just as well as we will play in spots, then there are times when we're just completely out of position. And my brother pointed it out. It's crazy for an NFL team to, he stopped it the game several times, and like, you, instead of players being squared up ready to make the tackle, it was like everybody had their shoulders turned, and it you know, he was like, it looked like you football, you know, you, that's what it looks like when you run a sweep and you stop it, you stop the tape, and everybody's just kind of out of position and nobody knows where they're supposed to be. We are like that on so many run plays. It's really frustrating, and we've just gotten off the hook. So I think either one of those teams that we play next week, if they're smart, they're going to look at this tape and they are going to, I know the Bears have to be kicking themselves for not running the ball more than they did. And Philadelphia has not run the ball at all well this year, but that their last game was a concern to the rest of the league. That he, you know, that I left that game saying, you know what, November, for if you're the Super Bowl champion, November football doesn't matter at all.
Yeah,
because they look like they look scary and serious, and it's January, and before I even knew that that was a possibility, they're not a team that I want to be, especially going into their place to play.
There was a play early, and I was in the Discord, and I said, I think it was the second play of the game, I was like, they may run for 150 today. Because if I'm Seattle, and I'm thinking about, like, how do I control this game? I don't want Sam Darnold to have to throw 30 times, because if Sam Darnold throws 30 times, then we're kind of playing into the 49ers' hands and what they want to do. And so when I saw it, I was like, okay, they're going to run this football. And you know, the thing that you were talking about, I think it was very early in the game. Alfred Collins, he was running in the opposite direction of where the play was going. And I was like, what is he doing? Like I don't know exactly what had happened for him to do that, but I think he kind of got misdirected because of the play call. Like, I think he got deked into thinking the play was going one way. And so he kind of turned his back and the play's going in the other direction. And I was like, that's not good. Like, that's just not what you want to see from the guy who's supposed to help you stuff the run. And that was like you said, you saw that often. And in some cases, you know, the Niners have smallish linebackers, and D Winters and Tatum Bethune, you know, they were getting that Gray Zabel out there.
Man,
and he was brutalizing these linebackers on these plays, and in some cases, like getting away with a little bit of extra. There's a little bit of like arm around the underneath the face mask, and just eating these poor dudes up. And you on the play where D Winters gets hurt, he actually has a beeline to Darnold. Like he kind of goes in unblocked, and I think it was, you know, he's trying to get through a hole, and he probably kind of got pushed a little bit. But the reason why he doesn't actually make the play is because he kind of gets pushed a little bit, and then he gets stepped on. He still almost made the play, but you just realize like how, you know, the linebackers are not. They're not that much, you know, bigger than big secondary players because they go for the speed, and, you know, because D Winters himself is a speed guy. And I was just like, man, this is not a great game. This physical game that the Seahawks are playing, probably not great for these smaller, faster linebackers, because they're having to make plays, you know, in the trenches that, you know, they would normally clean up. But now they're having to really bounce off of guys and stuff. And it was just like, I'm like, yeah, this is not a recipe for the Niners defense to have a lot of success here. So it was not a game that I had much confidence in after like the first quarter. And you know, as a fan, you're just kind of waiting. You're like, okay, what's going to be the thing? What's going to be the thing? Shelvin brought up the 4th-and-1 call in the chat where, you know, the Niners have successfully run that quarterback sneak, and I don't know if they maybe thought it was a little bit too long. It didn't seem that long, but that instead, you know, they're throwing some pass to the flat to Juszczyk, like for 1 yard. They obviously don't trust their running game. They didn't trust any play action, and it was just like, okay, like this is their offense being all out of sorts, and they could never flip the field when they needed to. They could never change the momentum, and then the little glimmer of hope that you have ends up in a turnover, and they're down 13-3. It's not like they're going to tie the game. They're going to just make the game close and to give you hope. But that was it. The entire second half was Seattle 3, 49ers 0. And if you look at like, if like you think back in the recesses of your memory, it would seem like it was 20-0 the way that the teams were playing.
Yeah, it really, you made several good points there. It was one of those things where I just never felt like we were going to be able to get over the hump. They're just a good team. And I, like I said, I'll say it again. I felt that it was more that they were a better defense than we were offense, and I felt like there was some huge failing. And you know, 49er fans are going to do their tile play calling thing. You know, that will be a huge type. Well, he didn't call, but I never felt like it was like, what plays was he supposed to call tonight that he didn't call. I didn't see anything that was like that jumped out at me. Well, we should be doing this instead of what it is we're doing. I was just like, man, we got to figure out how to get these guys blocked. And I knew with the lineup that we had, that was going to be problematic. And it turned out to be. And if you can't get it blocked, you know, there aren't very many plays in the playbook for when, you know, Brock is under siege. this is going to be successful in that circumstance.
So how's this for a stat? Seattle's yards per carry were almost exactly Brock's yards per completion. Like that, that's how bad the game was. And you know what? You know who didn't actually kill us? Like, I thought Smith and Jigba was going to go for like 150 and that they were going to run for 150. Now, he had a good game. He didn't have a great game. And so, you know, if you want to look at kind of the upside, is the pass defense did play, I think, much better than a lot of us thought. You know, if you take away some of the missed tackles, you know, the big plays that Seattle had are probably lessened, but that's part of their game in the open field. Charbonnet, I mean, that dude looks like Turbo and Ozone from Breaking, like just sending people in all kind of different directions with cuts and stuff. Like, he was awesome. And then, you know, they pretty much had an answer for everything that the 49ers could not answer. But there's not much else to talk about. Eddie Pinheiro had the one field goal. Jason Myers missed two. So that was, you know, if you had hope there, there was some hope. They had a nice punt return and a good kick return. But yeah, it was this game was you know, the Niners had two sacks, I guess, but it's just the pressure wasn't consistent. Sam O had a nice sack where that was maybe the best opportunity, at least from the Niners defensive line. That was the best play. Bethune had an early sack on when they were at the 1 yard line. And this is where you're like, okay, this is still Sam Darnold. Like, what the hell is he doing? So, you know, there's opportunities there, but it is it was just an outplay. Like, there's no, like, running back the game in my mind, there's maybe a play here or there which could have got them closer, but I don't know if there was a moment here or there that would have changed the outcome. I think it was a pretty good, realistic butt whooping, even though the score was only 13-3.
That fumble would have been huge. But again, it's one of those things where if we get the ball, we recover that fumble and we get the ball at the 30. What did we see offensively that convinces you that we're going to be able to cash that in for anything more than a field goal? I never felt like we were really threatening to score. It was such a slog. And I think with the way the season has gone to this point, when you're looking at the box score and you're not getting anything from CMC, it feels kind of hopeless, because throughout this year, and I guess I think that's more a credit to him and Kyle than anything else. It you know, we know week in and week out that has to be the game plan.
Yeah.
Is he's got to be the guy that's circled in red on the whiteboard every week. And every week it hasn't mattered. He has come out and he has produced. And when we are not getting that, it's like, it changes the whole calculus, the same way we've talked about the Steph Curry comparison to him when things are going good, his gravity. I think it's the opposite too. If he's not going, it kind of makes defending us a whole lot easier. If you figure out a plan to keep him in check, I mean, then it's like George, and, you know, that's kind of it. You know, and if you've got guys that you're comfortable with who can stay with him, that it's not going to be a track meet that he's so you're not you've got DBs that, you are confident with him that you're not in that and or your linebackers, because that's what ends up being with George is the thing is that most teams he's just a matchup nightmare, but they seem to have that kind of figured out. And then, you know, once you got those two where you feel like you're under control, the receivers are just not, they're just not, it's just not, you know, there's nothing that, those guys are going to do on a consistent basis that you're worried about in terms of, excuse me, they're just not kind of speed merchants or anything that they're not going to get behind you and threaten you in that way. So it's just, It was just a bad matchup for us.
Yeah, and if you get Trent back, I'm sure that makes them feel mm-hmm. a ton better. I'm sure it makes Brock feel a ton better. And you know, Ricky, I don't think you can count on Ricky, even if he does play. He's a tackle and falling on his knee away from being out again. So that's just going to be like, would you put money on, you know, Ricky playing three straight playoff games? I don't think mm-hmm. I would. Like, that just mm-hmm. hasn't been his season. He's played in almost as many games as he's missed in his young career so far.
And it's just one of those things where, like you said, I know I'm exaggerating, but it seemed like every time he would make a good catch, he would get hit, and then he'd be back on the sideline again. Yeah. And I'm sure that I'm saying that's probably an exaggeration, but I can think of several times where that was the case, where made a good play, but then he's out for the next series. You know, and so like you say, you can't, you know, write him in and pin or his production.
So let's end this show. I just want to go through the teams in the NFC and give me your comfort level. Like, first off, if you were to rank the playoff teams, who do you think is the best team in the NFC? Right now, as it stands, Seahawks are 1, Bears are 2, Eagles are 3, Bucks or Panthers are 4, and then you have Niners, Rams, Packers. Rams are going to leap the Niners unless, like I said, the ghost of Neil Lomax shows up and wins one for the old Cardinals there, back when they were the Phoenix Cardinals. And Rams and then Packers. Like, would you, from what you've seen, would the Seahawks be 1? Would the Eagles be 1? Mm-hmm. Would the Rams be 1? Who do you think is a top team?
I think it's the Seahawks. Based on the entire regular season, I would probably go with the Rams. I know that they have not been playing well lately, but I watched enough Rams to know that DeAndre Hopkins is, I mean, not, did I say DeAndre Hopkins? No, I meant Devontae Adams. Mm-hmm. Devontae Adams, wrong guy, but is very integral to what they do. And they kind of like what Kyle did with Trent and Ricky today. If, you know, McVay has been saying that if it were playoff games, Adams would have gone the last 2 weeks. So I think that they are, I would say Seattle. I am really impressed. I thought the Eagles looked good last week, and I know they've been up and down, but you know, I'm one of those guys that, you know, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And I just think that you get to a point where I don't necessarily believe in turning the switch on and off, but I saw something last week in them that, and if it's, you know, if they are, according to Hoyle, the way they've been the rest of the season, they'll stink it up this week. But if they don't, I would be concerned about them. So I think my top three teams, I think Seattle has clearly separated themselves. And then I think it's the Eagles and the Rams in whatever order you want to put them in.
Yeah. And the one thing about Seattle that would cause you to bet against them is Darnold. Like, that's the only thing. It's really the only thing. And so, you know, I think if you are in the NFC and you see that, okay, everything's got to go through Seattle, I think you're like pretty comfortable that if you can play some mistake-free football, that you're going to play with those guys. And I don't know that if the Rams and the Seahawks play before the NFC Championship game, I'm not sure that I wouldn't take the Rams at this point just because of that quarterback comparison. But but yeah, so that's, you know, that's a very interesting thing. I'm dying to see how Caleb plays in the playoffs, because as we know, the intensity's dialed up a bit. And yeah, like the Packers, and you know, I think their hopes are around Jordan Love getting loose and having like an incredible playoffs, but they're, you know, they're hurting. I don't think he's playing this week because he's got the concussion stuff. So, you know, the Niners are sitting in a position where I think fans will be happy if they play well, and really, really frustrated if they get boat raced in the playoffs. Like if we go into Philly and we go toe to toe with Philly, and it's a coin flip to who wins that game, I think fans will be hyped. I think fans would actually expect them to beat the Bears in Chicago. I don't know if I would expect them to beat the Bears, but I would expect them to play very well in Chicago. But those might be the Bears might be the only team of the top three. I guess they would be the top four of the top four that I would be really comfortable that the Niners could beat. Philly, the Rams, Seattle. I think I would favor all three of those teams against the Niners.
Yeah, but I think that's the one. If they could get Chicago there, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, you never like to play them so close together, but they'll both have that same advantage. But I think Chicago is gettable in a way that I think that Philly has not played as well this season as they're obviously capable of playing. They're a Super Bowl champion. And I expect them to have a very good playoff. And I think the things that they do well are things that are problems for the 49ers. They have a great pass rush. Their defense, again, in a way that we saw with Seattle, I think they have a scheme and a group of talent that can give us problems. And we have determined that at this point, we need to score points to win, and we're just not going to win I don't think we're going to win these defensive struggles. So if it's a 10-3 or a 20-7, I don't have confidence that we're going to win that kind of game. I think I think George was right. It was prophetic when he said middle of the season, you know, we got to score 30 a game.
Yeah.
And I think that is the kind of, that's the mindset that we have to have, is we're going to have to put up 30 to win. And I just don't know that we're going to be able to do that when against any of these other teams besides the Bears, push come to shove.
I can write the narrative right now if the Niners do play the Eagles from the Bay Area side, is, you know, the ghost of Brock Purdy's elbow was left out on that field. And, you know, for him, that would be a nice little thing for him to go out there and play really good football, because of how the last time, you know, they were there in the playoffs. The Rams, the Seahawks, the 49ers, the one thing that they did very well, because the Niners split with both of those teams, that, you know, it wasn't like they got rolled over by those guys. It was a iron sharpens iron kind of thing. So in the back of my mind, if I do like have some solace, it's that knowing that Seattle and the Rams are good and knowing that the 49ers played well against them, maybe these three teams are a little bit better battle tested, and the 49ers specifically, than we even realize, just because of these these games against each other. So, you know, if anything could prepare you for what the playoffs are going to be like tonight was one of those games. I would have preferred the Niners to play better and to play closer, but that is the type of team that they're going to have to be ready for in the playoffs. You know, if they go into Philly, it's going to be Seattle part two. And how do you figure that out? And, you know, I'm sure Kyle's thinking about that right now. Kyle's, he's not going home and going to bed. This dude is like, okay, how do we actually create some space and stuff for these guys? But I would like to point that out, in that while it feels a little bit like, okay, the Niners may not be as good as these other teams, I do want to remind myself that they played both of those teams competitively. Now, the second Rams game was not fantastic, maybe I am being a little bit more of a downer than I need to be, but they had an excellent season when it comes down to it, and much better than we thought coming into the season, or you know, at least after the injuries happened.
Especially after week five.
Yeah.
I think that if you want to put a silver lining on this, the playoffs started for them today. This was definitely a playoff type game. So where a team like the Bears or the Eagles, I don't know that they're going to have that kind of matchup this week. I don't even know, you know, there's been talk about how long the players are even going to play in those games, because their seeding is pretty much set. Whereas this was, you know, this was a playoff type intensity. So there's that. So it's going to be, it will be interesting to see how we are able to, who we get, and then, you know, how we are able to, you know, what our coaching staff is able to devise, to give us the best chance to win.
If they get some players back and they can compete, they've shown it all year. They're going to play, they're going to play as well as we can expect them. Now, if it's 3rd and 17 and Kenneth Walker is running for 19 yards again, that's maybe the worst play I've seen all year. Shelvin says he's playing with house money as a fan. I don't know if I'm playing with house money, but yeah, that there isn't an expectation of Super Bowl or bust in any way. And I think that's kind of a hard, I don't know if any team, maybe Philadelphia, but with no Chiefs, I think Buffalo fans will probably want to, you know, Josh Allen to kind of get back in a title game, because he doesn't have the big bad wolf of Pat Mahomes to face. So, you know, there's, I think a lot of teams are kind of in the same boat as us, which is like, hey, we have a chance. There's no 72 Dolphins. There's no Tom Brady Pats. There's no 80s 49ers. There's no 85 Bears. Like, there's no like team that is just kind of the lead dog going in this playoff. So this is kind of what the NFL wants too, right? Like you're going to have 14 teams in the playoffs, all whose fan bases are going to talk themselves into the idea of, you know, they better not let us get this one, because if we get this one, and you know, that whole conversation. So anyways, it'll be fun next week, and we'll do a lot of scoreboard watching on Sunday to see where things land. And Fred Warner was pretty fired up. I couldn't tell. Nick Bosa seemed to be chilling. I'm sure he wanted to be out there, but he was just kind of scratching his head like, oh man, this is not looking good. But hey, we have one more week to go at least, and the team the team's going to go out and ball out, hopefully. So, all right, that is going to be it from here. We'll be back next week after. We don't know when the playoff game is yet, so could be on Saturday, could be on Sunday. I don't think that they'd put the Niners on Monday night, but they did kind of screw with their schedule this time coming off of a short week. So maybe they would put them on Monday night, because I think one of the wild card games is a Monday nighter if it's the same schedule as it's been. So, all right, that's it from here. For Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Thanks and shout outs to Shelvin and Robert for being in the chat. Peace out.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.